Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Coming up in the show today, Governor Gavin Newsom's new drought declaration. We have all the details and audio from the governor's press conference. But we start off today with citrus. Research into HLB that I found to be very interesting coming out of Penn State this week. That's this week's My Ag Life in Citrus.
My Ag Life in Citrus is brought to you by Soil and Crop Incorporated, your number one resource for sustainable crop nutrition by putting nature to work for you.
Penn State and USDA scientists used CRISPR technology to develop a diagnostic test that can give us an early diagnosis of Huanglongbing disease. Huanglongbing threatens citrus production worldwide, which is valued at roughly $17 billion from the sale of fresh fruit and juices. Joining me on the phone is the head of the research project and professor at Penn State University, Yinong Yang. Here's our conversation.
I am very interested in the research that was done. As we know, Huanglongbing disease can be detrimental to citrus and has already caused so much damage to citrus around the world and here in the U.S. So tell me a little bit about the research.
Okay. So this particular research is used a technology called CRISPR-Cas as a diagnostic tool to detect citrus greening pathogen.
Okay. And when you're detecting the pathogen, how difficult is that?
So what happened is that citrus greening pathogen, it's also called CLAS, which is the abbreviation for Lepidobacter, Candidatus Lepidobacter aegypticus, which is a disease that caused major problems in Florida and also now starting in California. And so CLAS present in extremely low level. So it's very difficult to detect until the symptoms show up and then you have the disease kind of devastating the trees. So it's very crucial to detect at the early stage you can eradicate the infected citrus plant. And we thought that CRISPR-Cas, because its capability to detect pathogen DNA at extreme low level, which in our study show it's less than 10 to the minus 18, it's about 100 or 1,000 times more sensitive than the typical commonly used quantitative PCR or qPCR. So we thought that might be a very good tool for early detection of the citrus greening disease.
And as mentioned, early detection of the citrus greening can be very important. If it is detected early, what can be done from that point?
So if it's detected early, a lot of cases is pretty much you will eradicate, you will remove the tree, especially, let's say, in California. In Florida, it might be a little bit too late because most of the trees are infected. But in California, once you detect it, you want to basically remove the tree out of the grove.
Right, because the primary focus is to keep it from spreading to more trees,
right.
Correct?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So how does the CRISPR technology work? How does that actually work to detect the bacterium?
So CRISPR-Cas typically is used for genome editing. So my lab has been working on using the CRISPR and developed improving the tool of CRISPR technology for the last 7-8 years. And so we actually published one of the earliest paper on plant genome editing using CRISPR. But last couple of years, we also use CRISPR as a diagnostic tool for detect pathogen DNAs. So that's part of work related to our diagnostic efforts. And in this particular case, we're using a platform called a detector, which is developed by a scientist at University of California. In fact, the lab, Jennifer Doudna's lab, Jennifer received a Nobel Prize for 2020, Nobel Prize in chemistry. So their lab developed this original methodology using a Cas protein variant called Cas12a. And we basically adapt this method and modify and use for detect six screening pathogen.
So how long did this research take?
How long it takes? Well, for us, it's already been about 2 years. But I think, that's partly because my student working on multiple projects. It could be less time. Obviously, the detection itself is very quick. It only take, 1 to 2 hours.
Oh.
Hopefully we can further reduce the time required for if using the strip method. We could simplify the DNA extraction process. There are some DNA extraction process can be done in, 1 minute. And also then the detection maybe take another 30 minutes. So it could be everything within 1 hour. And the advantage of this methodology is it could be modified that you can do without any instrument. So it's instrument free. And if using the lateral flow strip, it's just like pregnancy test strip, and then it can be done in the field. So it's field deployable.
So that makes extremely useful because obviously you're dealing with citrus trees, and if you test one in the field, you might want to go to a neighboring field to test as well. And if you're getting results that quickly, it seems like that would be extremely useful. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I thought. In fact, I have been working citrus many years ago. My PhD was on studying citrus canker pathogen.
Okay.
And so I do familiar with citrus. In fact, I have been studying citrus back before I came to U.S. My first English publication was in citrographic. That was in 1987. So from 1982 to 1994, I basically worked on citrus. But after 1994, I really never actually worked on citrus until just a couple of years ago, we doing this small project on citrus screening diagnostics.
So it seems like this research is very impressive, and I think it's going to be a big benefit to the citrus industry. What is it that you would hope that our citrus industry listeners really get from this?
Yeah, I hope that we can further simplify and improve the methodology. Then it will be able to use practically in the field for the early detection. I mean, there's still some improvement needed in order to be used practically in the field.
Okay. And so will your team continue work on that, or will that go into the hands of other researchers?
So we hope maybe go to apply for some funding, get some funding. In fact, my current study, I don't really receive any specific grant to do that. It was kind of out of my personal interest. Partly because my lab have been working on CRISPR-Cas for many years, and we do have expertise on that. So I thought it was kind of interesting to adapt this method and to see if that method works for sensitive detection. I never really apply a grant, or receive a grant, particular grant related to this study. We thought maybe if we have some funding to continue to work on, that would be great.
Yeah, I'm sure that thousands of citrus growers agree that that would be great to have a grant continue.
Yeah.
Thank you again to Yunong Yang. I've put a link to that article about the technology in today's show notes for those who would like to read more. Our news brief is coming up next. We'll be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you. The My Ag Life Daily News Report is brought to you in part by the California Walnut Board.
Here's our news brief for today. CDFA's Bureau of Livestock Identification, or BLI, will lower inspection fees by 10 cents per head beginning on July 1st. The Bureau's advisory board and CDFA Secretary Karen Ross made the determination due to a budget surplus in the program that developed after the BLI moved to a mobile applications that lessened the amount of time spent on paperwork. The BLI, which is California's brand registration and inspection program protecting cattle owners against the loss of animals, is financed entirely through fees. BLI has 44 inspectors and inspected 3.56 million head of cattle in 2019-2020. The Northwest Cherry Growers Field Estimate Team has compiled an initial round one projection for the 2021 Northwest crop. Annually, the 22-person estimation team looks at their orchards as well as the surrounding area's volume dynamics and compiles overviews for their area. This year, the first round data from the model suggests a 2021 crop of 237,992 tons. Canadian National Railway has placed an order for 1,000 new generation high-capacity grain hopper cars. The new rail cars to be built in Mexico will help meet the growing needs of the North American grain farmers and the demands of grain customers. The order is part of a larger program to build and renew a fleet of 6,000 hopper rail cars over the next 3 years. Rural areas have particularly felt the impacts from the COVID-19 pandemic, prompting increased education about preventive measures, including vaccinations. Rod Bain reports.
The impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic in rural America have been significant. A recent USDA study showed cases of the virus in non-metro, i.e. rural areas, over the course of the pandemic to be higher than in metro locales. As U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy explains,
we knew before this pandemic that many parts of rural America didn't have equal access to healthcare, that many of them struggled to have, for example, specialists provide care because the number of specialists available to healthcare workforce was not as robust as it needed to be.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack adds that in several places in rural America, there was perhaps a false sense of security.
There may have been a bit of overconfidence about the fact that we live in a small town. We won't be as impacted and affected as those who live in congested cities. That obviously turned out not to be the case, unfortunately and tragically.
These factors are why the Agriculture Secretary thinks it's
critically important that we rebuild, that we create a higher level of confidence, if you will, in the notion of being vaccinated, particularly in rural areas.
The Surgeon General says even with recent loosening of restrictions regarding mask wearing by the Centers for Disease Control,
we still have more than 50,000 people a day who are getting infected with COVID-19. We're losing hundreds of people a day still, and we have hundreds of millions of people who still need to be vaccinated in our country. So we've got work to do, and a key part of that is not just getting the vaccine to people, but making sure we're getting them the right information so they can make good decisions for themselves and their families as we move forward.
The increase in available vaccination information from government is something Secretary Vilsack believes will be needed in the coming months.
To reinforce the necessity of getting vaccinated, to reduce the concern that people may have about any risk associated with vaccinations, and to make sure that we do everything we possibly can to make it as easy as possible for people in rural areas to get that shot in the arm.
Dr. Murthy explains that with the COVID-19 vaccinations currently available,
people can feel good that the vaccine safety system is working for them and that we have solid options here available that are effective and have a very strong safety profile. That at this point, the side effects that people may worry about or hear about from time to time, these are actually quite mild and they only last for 24 to 48 hours typically.
The Agriculture Secretary adds vaccination and information remains essential for employees and workers involved in our nation's food and farm supply chain, from safety perspectives of employees to assuring an available food supply.
I think the farm community has responded well. I know a number of large farming operations are, in fact, making vaccination opportunities available to their workers. I've had conversations with governors of states encouraging them as they talk about the need for vaccination to point out the importance of having these essential workers vaccinated. There's a good deal of turnover that can take place in these processing facilities. And even though you may have vaccinated your full complement of workers 6 weeks ago, you may have new people that just started working. So it is a message that needs to be reinforced.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
At its 12th annual Executive Leadership Conference, Growth Energy unveiled a new consumer initiative to raise awareness of biofuels' positive environmental benefits and encourage consumers to choose higher biofuel blends like E15 at the pump. Through a series of targeted digital content, advertising, and digital media, the Get Biofuel campaign aligns biofuel benefits to an empowerment message titled Fuel Beyond. The campaign is slated to expand nationally in the fall. That's our news for today. I'll be back in a few minutes with details on the governor's drought declaration, but Jason Scott is up next with this week's How It Works segment. We'll be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Welcome to another episode of How It Works. Today I'm here with Superior Soil. And Colt, Craig, welcome to the show. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. Fantastic. Thanks for asking. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being here with us today. Let's start out by talking a little bit about Superior Soil. Colt, will you start us out and tell us a little bit about Superior Soil?
Yeah, Superior Soil is one of the leading soil amendment companies in the greater California area. And we reach into the western U.S. and try to serve everyone we can. We have pretty much any dry amendment product that you would see going into various types of crops, including your commodities and your specialty crops, tree crops, row crops. We cover every gamut there is. We've been known as the go-to company for gypsum. But we also do carry a full line of products, including sulfur, compost, dolomite, limes, amongst all the other products that complement those. We've gotten real hot and heavy into blends, custom blends for each farmer. That way they have one path through the field, trying to reduce compaction with their spreaders. And, yeah, that's us in a nutshell.
How long have you guys been in business?
That's a good question. I believe 1982 this company was founded.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you guys have been around for quite a bit, helping and serving the community.
Yes, sir.
Well, I understand you guys have a new technology. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your new technology?
I'll let Greg explain on that.
Yeah, we wanted to break things out a little bit different than other companies, and we wanted to offer a full line of analyzing. So we purchased a automated sampling system made in Germany, and that system operates off of satellite tracking and operates off of satellite sampling. And so we can go in, and before we meet with a grower, we map it out as to where the grower might feel that he has different types of soil. So we go in, map that out, and do the sampling in the field. The good thing about that is we can go back year after year, going back into the same exact hole that we were the previous year. If we've made any changes, made any amendment changes, added any nutrients, fertilizers, it should give us an opportunity to see some improvement in that. With that, we've also become a partner with Brookside Labs. Brookside is one of the oldest laboratory companies in the United States. And so we get the information from them. We've created a software program that we enter all the information based off the cation exchange. It shows what your overages and shortages are on all nutrients, including minors. And then we sit down with a grower to educate and to fill in the blanks of what they need to add, or maybe they're already spending money on something that they don't need, that we can redirect that money into a different area based on their budget or their needs.
That sounds pretty proficient. How long has this new tech been implemented with your company?
Fully implemented, probably about 6 to 9 months.
So what can growers expect if they do business with you?
Well, it's a science-based program. We're not just making recommendations based off of our needs or trying to sell a product. We're completely looking at the whole nutrition program. And you have to have balance in the soil. And a lot of other companies want to sell a product, and we're not necessarily looking to sell any product, but sell a need and match up with what the science says.
So we're in a time where growers are looking at cutting costs and doing what works best for their orchards and for their crops. Why Superior Soil? What competitive advantages does Superior Soil bring to the table for growers today?
The Superior Soil, we're close to all the sources of all the products. We're the one that brings them all in, and we're going to distribute them at the most cost-effective rate we can. We're always competitive with our pricing. We have our sister company, Empire Mining, is our source for our gypsum, so it's about as close as you're going to get to the actual source. We have partnerships with the various producers and mines that have all of the products. We work hard to make sure that we put ourselves in that position, and we're able to provide those services and those products at a lot more cost-effective pricing than most other companies.
Jason, I'd like to add to that time and time again, when we pull samples and we look at samples, unfortunately, we've seen a lot of people who are farming what Grandpa did, what Dad did, and I do the same. And so what we find is that someone is adding a product based on repetition versus what's based on science. So just let's say calcium, magnesium, we're just going to order 2 tons this year because that's what we've always done. But when we look at the science side of that, we already have an abundance of calcium in the soil, but yet we may lack in potassium or phosphorus, where we could redirect that same money that's being spent to be actually to have a better balance in the soil to begin with, and saving the growers money and making proper nutrient adjustments.
Any other details you would like growers to know about Superior Soil or your products and services?
I'm not sure that anyone else has the system that we do, and we put the whole package together as far as the sampling, the satellite, the Brookside. It's just a total package that overall I think that we offer something that other companies aren't doing in the area. And I think it's it's very reasonable. We're reasonable. And the other part of that, too, is the education. A lot of the growers get a soil sample or a water sample back, and they are told what to do, and then they either do it or don't do it, and that's just one more piece of paper on the stack. And I think when we sit down with a grower and we kind of educate and work with them, we're explaining why you're doing what you're doing and not just because it's written on a piece of paper, this is what you need to do. But I think there's a lot of growers that have never had it explained to them. And it's a whole education piece that once you have that buy-in with a grower and they understand why they're doing it or why they may be short on a particular nutrient and the importance of that nutrient, I think that goes a long way versus just having a recommendation on a piece of paper and here you need to put X amount of tons down or X amount of pounds down. They don't really understand why. And I think that's where we're making a difference.
Okay, so if I'm an interested grower or crop consultant, where can I learn more about Superior Soil?
You can give us a call. Our office line is 559-584-7695, or you can reach out through our website, www.superiorsoil.com.
Well, thanks for being on the show today. Really appreciate all the information and you sharing your new technologies and innovations with us.
Thank you, Jason, very much for the opportunity. Appreciate your time.
This is Jason Scott reporting with My Ag Life.
Having problems with nematodes? Promax is your number one solution. Promax is a powerful fungicide, nematicide that works to kill and control nematodes and soil-borne disease. Promax is a powerful and easy-to-use product in your fields. WaterRite Technologies is your source for this powerful solution. Visit WRTAG.com/Promax for more information. Agromiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Root Pack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Root Pack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Governor Gavin Newsom Monday significantly expanded his April 21st drought emergency proclamation to include Klamath River, Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, and Tulare Lake watershed counties, where accelerated action is needed to protect public health, safety, and the environment. In total, 41 counties are now under a drought state of emergency, representing 30% of the state's population. In April, Governor Newsom signed an emergency proclamation directing state agencies to take immediate action to bolster drought resilience across the state and declaring a state of emergency in Mendocino and Sonoma counties due to severe drought conditions in the Russian River watershed. Today, the governor took action to ensure an expedited response to address acute drought impacts in the Klamath River, Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, and Tulare Lake watershed counties. The governor held a news conference Monday afternoon to talk about the drought declaration. Here are his comments.
I'll mention a number of our key agency leaders, but I appreciate the congressman recognizing Don Cameron in particular. I just want to recognize Wade Crowfoot, head of our Natural Resources Agency, and the team that he's assembled here, and from the water departments represented by a number of key leaders that I'll introduce in a moment. But I want to just to highlight why we're here. It's self-evident to many folks that the hots are getting a lot hotter in this state. The dries are getting a lot drier. We have to recognize that we're living in a world that we were not designed to live in. We have a system, conveyance system, a water system that was designed for a world that no longer exists. And it's incumbent upon us to acknowledge that, incumbent upon us to reimagine a different future, much more resilient, much more vibrant, much more dynamic water delivery system here in this state. 3 weeks ago, literally 3 weeks ago, we announced a state of emergency, a proclamation of a declaration of emergency in the Russian River watershed, impacting just two counties in the state. notably Sonoma County and Mendocino County. Today, building on that proclamation, we are extending a proclamation of a state of emergency to 39 additional counties in the state of California. Now, all in total, 41 counties are in a drought emergency. As we said at the time, just 3 weeks ago, we were going to flex up based upon need. We'd look at the issue of hydrology. We'd look at the issue of snowmelt. We'd look at the issues of preparedness, and we do so in real time. Accordingly, we make that commitment in an iterative process as we move forward into the second year of a drought to keep an open mind and to be mindful of the dynamics and the changing conditions as it relates to hydrology, as it relates to snowmelt, as it relates to storage, conveyance, and the like here in the state. Let me just talk about the last 3+ weeks. In the last few weeks, we've lost roughly 500,000 acre feet of runoff compared to what we had anticipated, which put into language that I hope people can understand is the equivalent of 1 million households receiving water for a year. That's just in the last number of weeks in the state of California. What we've experienced is what some had predicted, but no one necessarily experienced, and that was snowmelt so acute that it didn't actually run off into reservoirs or rivers, but it actually seeped into the dry, parched ground underneath, much of it evaporating completely. The snowmelt has been precipitous, and it's happened primarily because of drought conditions preceding this year's snowpack, but also because of the warmer temperatures that all of us have experienced over the course of the last number of weeks. This all off a year 2020, which was the third driest year in recorded history here in the state of California. So this drought, though the second year of a drought, happening just a few years after the end of a 5-year drought that began in 2012 and ended in 2016, in many respects is familiar, but in other respects is more challenging and more acute than we could have imagined. I'm standing here in front of a reservoir that's about 57% of its seasonal average in terms of capacity, 49% of its total capacity. That runs roughly equivalent, plus or minus, to what you're seeing in reservoirs all across the state. While the snowpack came in relatively well this year, and the April snowpack, though modest, the acute conditions have created even more challenges for these reservoirs and our capacity to meet the needs of 40 million thirsty Californians. And so this drought proclamation should provide us flexibility, should address issues around conveyance, working with water agreements, different water agencies, allow us more flexibility at a local and regional basis, allow us some reprieve around CEQA regulations and permitting permitting issues, as well as issues associated with contracting, some relief. But at the end of the day, that's not good enough. And that's why we're also pleased to announce today $5.1 billion, a record investment into water resiliency and water infrastructure in this state. $5.1 billion. Just today, we announced the state of California is running an operating surplus of $75.7 billion. $75.7 billion. We're using that surplus and the support, Congressman Costa's critical support of $26 billion from the federal stimulus, to make investments in critical infrastructure. No more critical need than addressing the water needs here in the Central Valley, but also the water needs all up and down the state of California, watersheds large and small, not just the new and substantive declaration today as it relates to the Sacramento-San Joaquin watershed, the Delta watersheds, and Tulare watershed, but also what's happening up Northern California at the Klamath watershed, what's happening with small water systems all up and down the state of California that rely on depleted groundwater. What's happening broadly to an agricultural industry that's working through the new guidelines and requirements, responsibilities under SGMA. The challenges for habitat and wildlife and the Pacific Flyway, issues related all to this drought emergency. How can we flex and make the critical investments that we need long-term on issues of conveyance and distributions, issues related to infrastructure like rebuilding canals, but also how can we be mindful in the short run of some of the critical needs for habitat, for steelhead and salmon as it relates to cold water temperatures that we need to allow for at peril of some extinction issues occurring on our watch later this year. Not hyperbole to suggest that. What can we do in terms of more resiliency on floodplains and watersheds, and how can we invest in habitat that can bring us back to some semblance of historic normalcy to allow us, again, more resilience through these extremes year in and year out in the state of California? How do we provide emergency supplies, emergency grants to those same water systems? That's all part of that $5.1 billion package. How do we secure the needs of small water systems at the same time meet the needs of million plus Californians that not only don't have access to safe, affordable, and clean drinking water, but also can't pay their water bills because of this pandemic-induced recession. And that's why we're also pleased to announce today, in addition to the drought proclamation, now including 41 counties in the state of California, in addition to the $5.1 billion that we will invest in water portfolio and water infrastructure investments in the state of California. We're also proposing for consideration of the legislature an additional $1 billion to help people offset their water bills. And in turn, particularly for small water systems, provide some stability for those water systems that are in peril of financial insolvency related to not only this pandemic, but the extreme drought that we're experiencing. So $1 billion will also be invested in that effort. So that's the totality, at least in the immediate of the actions. And by the way, when I say immediate, many of these actions are emergency actions, emergency appropriations. Many are medium-term strategies, and yes, those long overdue strategies, all in expectation and in partnership with the federal government, recognizing that's the way it used to be done. When President Kennedy was right here in 1962, and you could see the quote when they did the groundbreaking for this site, it was about partnerships, federal and state partnerships. To be big, you got to be big in big things. And there's nothing bigger than the work that was done in the 1950s to invest in this infrastructure, Northern, Southern California, this remarkable conveyance system that helped us build the world's largest middle class and helped obviously make California, not just California, but this nation as vibrant, as strong as it is. And we recognize our responsibility in the future to do more and do better, mindful of the changing conditions, mindful of climate change, mindful of the reality that not having a drought increasingly is becoming the, well, that's the anomaly. It's really not anomalous any longer not to be in a drought when you consider what's happened in the Western United States, not just here in California, since 2000.
That is our show for today. As always, we'll continue to watch the drought situation and all the politics that go with it. If you have another topic you'd like us to cover, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.